Sick of procurement bottlenecks, endless back and forth, and last-minute surprises? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify and automate their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement. You'll know whether spend is approved before you buy, and Bill's AI-powered automation helps reduce errors so you can make purchasing decisions with confidence. Plus, Bill Procurement puts everything you need to match and pay invoices right at your fingertips. So dump your clunky procurement process and keep your business moving and growing with Bill Procurement. Purchase, pay, and on with your day. Right now, score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Just go to bill.com/procurement200. Don't wait. That's bill.com/procurement200.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
It took Austin 34 years to name the man who killed four teenage girls in the yogurt shop in North Austin. His name, Robert Eugene Brashears, a serial predator, turns out. Yeah, serial predator. In this case, already linked to multiple rapes and murders across the country. He died by suicide in 1999, long before anyone connected him to the case. But the real story isn't just how they solved it. It's how they didn't, how investigators locked onto four innocent young men, how two of them were convicted, one sent to death row based entirely on confessions that never matched the evidence, how DNA that excluded them was ignored, downplayed, or twisted to fit a theory the state refused to let go of. It's a case about tunnel vision, about coercive interrogations, about prosecutors doubling down even when the science told them they were wrong. It's about what happens when you let the need for closure override the need for truth. We're not just talking about the yogurt shop murders. We're talking about what it reveals about the system itself and the lives that get crushed when that system refuses to admit it was wrong. Joining us now is defense attorney Bob Motta, host of Defense Diaries and someone who spent his career fighting the kinds of tactics that wreaked havoc in this case. We're going to break down how two innocent men ended up in prison, how the courts failed to stop it, and how many more cases like this are still buried in evidence lockers across the country today. Bob, as always, welcome and thank you for joining us. When you see a case like this where the system locked onto the wrong guys and absolutely did not look back until it was forced to, what does it tell you about how we chase resolution over truth?
Well, sadly, that's just a reality of what we're dealing with the criminal justice system these days, because at some point in time, it became less about justice and the search for truth, and it became more about winning. And I think the biggest problem that you have from the prosecutor's side of the equation is the fact that they're elected. It's a political position. Mm-hmm. And when you have a political position, you know, when you're having to run for election, you're going to try to beef up your resume. Mm-hmm. Okay? And if you're running for prosecuting attorney, tough on crime is the way to go. You know, like that's the way they've always said how you win the position. So, and what is tough on crime? Oh, well, you know, my conviction rate's 98%. Mm-hmm. And the exclusion of the truth. So that's just a sad fact. Mm-hmm. That is an absolute reality that no one is going to ever convince me otherwise. That is one of the primary issues with our system these days. And that is not to say in any way, shape, or form that I don't think that there are amazing prosecutors out there that are doing this the right way, that really do, you know, care about the truth. And that's what they're, but at some point, you know, you come in, because I think it's probably a lot like when you come in on the defense side of it and you come in as a young lawyer, you're bright eyed, you're bushy tailed. You know, you think I'm going to change the world. I'm going to change the world from inside, only to get bitch slapped and realize, all right, you know, this system's been set in stone for a long time, bro. You ain't doing shit, you know? So you're in there trying to one time it. And I have a feeling that a lot of prosecutors go into that job, you know, same way, but on the opposite side of it, just saying, look, I'm here to do right by victims and to bring justice to the families. And, you know, so you go in with all the best intentions, and then like anything, the bastards just grind you down, you know? So ultimately, when you see a case like this, and it's two sides of it, right? It's like the law enforcement and the prosecutor. It's both. It starts mm-hmm. with law enforcement. And, you know, when you look at the yogurt shop murder case and you're thinking about it, you know, it was like a hard-on cop that just decided for some reason that these four kids had done this. Mm-hmm. Like it's just a fucking total hard-on cop. It had no evidence to suggest it, just like came up with this concept. Oh, it's the Creek kids. Mm-hmm. It's Creek fucking people. That's what makes sense. I mean, and the guy locks into it. And then they start using Hector Polanco to start fucking extracting confessions from these kids, man. And it's like, yeah, it's scary is what it is, Tony.
And it's scary because at the same point, if you look at that group of folks who were doing the investigation at the time, I don't think that they were sitting there going, we're going to get these kids convicted. I don't care if they did it or not. I think they believed that they were doing was right. I think they thought that they were actually, well, the kids confessed. They must have confessed. And they confessed. It's real. That's it. Then they get their blinders on and there's no room for any other way of thinking. But I don't think they were sitting there nefariously going, let's just get these kids and call it a day. And that's the scary part, when you actually believe your own myth, your own bullshit.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, if you watch the documentary, you can see, you know, especially the main two guys, right? The first two investigators were just a couple of guys that were really trying to do everything in their absolute power to try to solve this case for these families that, mm-hmm. you know, in this case that devastated Austin and Texas in general, but Austin in particular. Yeah, no, there is no doubt in my mind that in terms of trying to get it solved, that when they kind of landed on these kids, but remember, it wasn't those first two guys. Mm-hmm. That we're talking about here. Those first two guys that are still tight with all the family, you know, and it was well known that Polanco was the cop who would extract false confessions. Mm-hmm. You know, like for quite frankly, I was a little bit shocked. Not only that one of the cops kind of threw one of the other cops over, and I understand that, and I don't know if Polanco is still with us or not. Mm-hmm. But when you got another cop saying, yeah, this guy was infamous for getting innocent people to confess to shit they didn't do, and that's one of the other cops. I mean, if I'm a lawyer out there and...
But at the time, was it viewed as that, though? I mean, yes, retrospectively, we can look at it and go, he got people to confess to shit they didn't do. At the time, they're looking at it as, he's the guy who gets confessions out of people.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, yeah, it did matter. It mattered to some of the cops. Like, that's what I'm saying. I forget what his name is, John Jay or whatever. Yeah. He's one of the most prominently featured cops in there. You know, the guy who really, really haunted him. And he's like, I'm still thinking about it. The guy with the striped shirt, right? Like,
sure,
like when this shit gets off.
Yes,
I was looking for him online yesterday to see if he wore his shirt again.
He did. I saw a video earlier today. And he did. He did wear the shirt.
Yeah, that dude, man. No, like he knew. Like he was an intellectually honest cop, and you know he had problems with them looking at these kids. He didn't think that these kids were the right call, and ultimately they moved him off the case.
Yeah,
you know, because of his kind of resistance to what they were putting out there in terms of how they thought this case went down. So. I mean, cops are just like anybody else. They're individuals. There's always going to be, you know, differences in opinion, just like any other job. But, you know, ultimately, you know, what happened here was they get locked in on a concept, on a theory, and it's really, really hard to get them off of it, you know, and ultimately. And then it started with the cops there, and then it moved up to the prosecutor's office.
Yeah.
Like, it's a compelling story, and... The River, the Creek kids, you know, they sound like fucking nefarious little motherfuckers, and let's hang it on them. You know, it's but like the problem is when you don't have any evidence,
no
what your intentions are.
They were able to coerce a confession out of them. And then you got a community that's seething to find somebody.
I was just going
to
say that.
And if you go, the River kids did it. Of course, the River kids did it. And you're basically you're running on hysteria.
Totally.
And hysteria is not fact. Hysteria rarely ever produces anything out of it that is tangible or meaningful once the hysteria calms down. But unfortunately, it's like, well, here we got it out of the hysteria. It's fact. And that's a scary thing. 18 hours to get Michael Scott to confess. Robert Springsteen confessed after 5. Neither had legal counsel present. Both later recanted. We look at this. This happened in the very, very early 90s. Have things changed all that much in the United States of America in terms of getting confessions out of people?
No. Next question. No, they haven't. I mean, it's... I mean, the Reed technique, I think, should be outlawed. Look, they're always going to be able to come into an interview and lie to you until the Supreme Court, you know, reverses that ability to be able to do so. Because right now, you know, and they can't lie about certain things. Like, they can't say if you just confess to me right now, I'm going to make sure I'm going to walk you out of here. We're not going to charge you. You know what I mean? Like that.
Yeah.
Like, if you're talking about some kind of immunity deal, that's going to be brokered by a prosecuting attorney, not a cop. But, I mean, they can certainly come in and say, hey, man, you know, we got your fucking homie over here in the next interview room. And that is a real problem for you because this guy just fucking ratted you out, you know. So, like, and you're telling this guy that, and it's all like a mind fuck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you're in there because just, like, we could spend probably a full day trying to get people to understand that false confessions are a real thing. Yeah. And you know, we had Michael Scott's attorney on with us last night.
Yeah.
And he was fascinating. But, you know, one of the things that we were talking about was this concept of trying to convince people that there is such a thing as false confessions, because everybody's initial instinct in terms of like being a human being is, hey, you know what? There's no fucking way I would ever confess to something I didn't do. I don't give a fuck what they're doing to me. That's what people say. That's what people think. And that is the base from where people jump off from. Like, so like everybody thinks I would never confess to something I didn't do. Like that is just, so that is where you're trying to overcome from that cognitive bias right there that I just wouldn't do it. So no one would do it, mm-hmm. you know, but the reality is that when you get into a room with a skilled interrogator,
yeah,
you know, and the memory and the mind, it plays tricks on you. It is very easy to fool your mind into something being true or some version of it being true. And it's exactly what they do in these interviews and these interrogations where, you know, like people, kids come in there like, I didn't have a fucking thing to do with it. And they just suggest facts and, you know, they're dropping little breadcrumbs because ultimately the person needs to kind of come up with some version of it on his own. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously if they don't know any of the facts of how it went down, it's very problematic.
So Bob, where was their defense? Where were their people for these people who are wrongly accused and falsely confessed? Where were their people to come forward and say, wait a minute, no, they didn't do this. You don't have any evidence against them. It feels like that part of it fell off.
Yeah, I mean, their people ended up being their lawyers. You know what I mean? But even with the lawyers, I remember they were convicted. Mm-hmm. So then their people became the appellate lawyers who decided to continue the fight. And, you know, but in terms of if you're asking like the question, hey, Bob, where are all the witnesses coming forward at trial? Your problem here is that you're limited to, and it was a long trial. It was a long trial. It was, you know, but the thing that ended up happening with it is you've got people that were in a very segregated area from kind of the rest of the public down in this creek. And who are you going to get to testify if they didn't know their whereabouts? I mean, because essentially what you're talking about is like an alibi witness. You know, you can't just throw a bunch of character witnesses up and talk about it unless it's somebody to talk about that, you know, this is not a violent person. You know, they got mm-hmm. a people nature, you know, but in terms of like, this is a good guy and he would never do that kind of shit. You're not getting that kind of witness on. So short of having a witness who is going to say, yeah, I'm this fucking alibi. You know why? Because I was with them last night and he wasn't anywhere near the yogurt shop. So go fuck yourself. Mm-hmm. Quit trying to get an innocent man. Bastard.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a huge difference between an interrogator and a manipulator. Yeah. And the sad part is, I think a lot of these individuals, that especially the ones that had like the really strong records of, you know, they're always getting the confessions. That's manipulation. That's not interrogation. There's a huge difference between the two. And one is actually getting information. One is making things up. But at the end of the day, if the result is looked at the same, there's a lot more incentive to have more manipulators on your force than there is interrogators, if that's going to supposedly bring you the gratification that you need and bring you the results you need in that moment. May not work out long term, but if it gets that case off your desk and gets it moving at that moment in time, that's what a lot of them are going for.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt. And this is not a situation where you're casting shade on every cop or prosecutor in the world. It's not. And we talk about this many, many times over here, man. It's
a fundamental brokenness of the system.
It just is, man. And it's like the power with a corrupt fucking cop is that they have so much power.
Mm-hmm.
That's what terrifies me about mm-hmm. them is that, like in the cops, like the prosecutors, like defense attorneys, I think a majority of us come into it with the right intentions, right? And you end up just getting just absolutely perverted by the system. And I don't mean perverted in a sexual sense. I mean, just like it becomes impossible to kind of fight the grind of it. You know what I mean? And it's like, and for cops, I mean, can you imagine how fucking tempting it is to, if you've got a case where you're like, man, I know this dude is the guy and mm-hmm. I just don't have the evidence to prove it. How tempting it would be just to plant one little fucking thing.
Your gut instinct better be right.
Well,
but even if it is right, and then you're caught planting something, and then let's say the person is it. Well, that's what's going to get them off too.
Correct.
Well, it's the whole Gacy thing that I uncovered. Like you had Gacy, you know, they didn't know he was the monster, right? They knew that they knew that he had kidnapped the last kid, and they were convinced of it.
They knew he was a monster. They didn't know he was the monster.
Right. Well, I don't even know at that point if he'd slipped past just like a fucking creep into a monster in the minds of the cops, because he wasn't really on their radar, even though they like to say that, even though he was very much on their fucking radar. If Chicago police had done their job, they would have had Gacy after the third kid. But they didn't do their job. So, but that's a whole different thing. But so, yeah, I mean, they planted the evidence in terms of injecting that receipt into that house to get back in, because 10 days had gone by and they couldn't get anything on him. They fucking knew it was him. They couldn't get anything on him because the guy wasn't an idiot. And like, he's not an idiot in the sense that he's not going to go out and be killing people during the time in which he's been tailed 24/7 by the police. So in that situation, somebody up top, Posen Zach, makes a decision. He's going to plant the photo receipt just to get them in to get the second warrant, because they needed to get back in the house. So they get back in the house, and you know, that's on the second warrant. And they start uncovering the graveyard in the crawl space. When I uncovered that, I'm like, okay, this is a fucking moral dilemma, right? Like, you've got this absolute fucking monster who absolutely needs to be stopped, but you can't get to him the way that you got to him because the Constitution has to matter. We can't pick and choose. It becomes such a slippery slope when you're like, okay, but this guy's a fucking monster animal. We're just going to pretend like the Constitution doesn't exist for this one case because we got to take this. You can't do it. You just can't do it because it's a slippery slope. Because then, and the next time you're like, look, we did it for Gacy. This is basically the same shit. And then it becomes more and more. You just can't do it. You can't chip away at those incredibly important rights. And so,
And it's not like they wouldn't have gotten Gacy eventually anyhow. I mean, there would have been something would have tripped it to get in there and get that information.
100%.
But they did it. They, you know, basically they warped the level. They got there a little bit faster than maybe they needed to, but obviously ultimately did get them. But do the ends justify the means is kind of the question.
Right. It can't. We can't allow it to. As much as we're tempted to say, yes, fuck him. We can't.
Yeah,
it's that simple. Like,
because there's a case where there's going to be a case where there isn't a graveyard in the guy's basement or under his house.
It you can't set a precedent that it's okay to pick and choose who the Constitution applies to. It's that simple.
Yeah,
you can't do that. Like, there, you know what I'm saying? It's like if you allow that one time, you've then created some kind of precedent that look, there's exceptions to who the Constitution's not going to apply to. And to go back to exactly what you just said, because you're not always going to, they had no fucking idea this guy had a graveyard in his crawl space. None. Zero. They were literally looking for one kid.
Yeah.
It just happened to stop one of the fucking most horrific serial killers of all time. So, I mean, it was a boon, you know, and they didn't get caught. Like, I caught him.
Yeah.
Gacy's dead. So, you know, it's still an amazingly fascinating and kind of terrifying story. In a global type of way, but man, you know, I mean, you can't do it, but I get why they do.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's what I'm talking about. If you've got a case where you've got a guy that you just know, like the whole Avery thing with the keys, like I really do believe that they planted those keys, but that doesn't mean that I don't think that Stephen Avery wasn't the guy. And I certainly think that law enforcement in that case believed that Stephen Avery was the guy, you know, and they're like, okay, this fucking guy walked out after 18 years on the last shit, even though it wasn't him. He's like, we're going to make sure that he's not walking out on this one, you know? Cause I mean, it's like,
So,
or it could be that Manitowoc didn't want to pay him $1 million too.
100%, dude.
Yeah,
100%. Like,
it's a good point.
Allie and I are in the middle of that thing, and I have, like, until I've looked through all of it, I'm not reaching a conclusion based on anything that I've seen, whether it be making a murderer and convicting a murderer. I don't give a fuck. Those both had objectives going in, or soon got an objective after they started filming. So yeah, I don't know, man. Cause yeah, that is more than a million. I mean, he was suing for more than a million, you know. Yeah. I mean, it was a major lawsuit, and it was one that they were going to have to pay out on, because he was absolutely, unequivocally not guilty of the first thing that he spent all the time on. So
yeah. What's also interesting, I mean, in the yogurt shop case here, we have Austin, we have this community, four young girls dead. Everybody is scared. Anyone who has children is thinking, well, this could happen to me. This could happen to my daughters. We need justice. We need our boogeyman. We got to. And so they're, it's the Creek Kids. They're spooky. They're weird. In Wisconsin, it's Stephen Avery. He's got the junkyard. He's weird. He's kind of got, you know, he's kind of out there. When you re-examine cases like this, when you look at them locally, and this is, I think, kind of a new way of doing it, because back in the 90s, unless it was a major national news story, we weren't hearing about the yogurt shop murders in Wisconsin or Chicago or wherever anybody is. Just like a lot of places was not hearing about the Stephen Avery case until Making a Murderer came out. Yep. And locally, the atmosphere, the temperature in those rooms is oftentimes quite different than any place else in the country who may be looking at it from a slightly lower temperature. I want to ask Stacy and Todd about the Avery case for a moment, because I haven't lived in Wisconsin for more than half my life now, but I was there when this all went down. What is the overall feel? What's the temperature in Wisconsin about Stephen Avery? Is it that he's guilty? Because that's the vibe I got when I made a mention of it a couple months ago on a radio station in Wisconsin. I was talking about the procedural issues with the case, and oh my God, people didn't like that. People did not like any questioning of the law enforcement on that case whatsoever. But the rest of the country is like, look at all the holes in this. Not there. Not there.
Well, I think it's because, you know, we don't want to believe that there's a miscarriage of justice right in our backyard. And so I think a lot of people are invested in this case because they know people in these communities. So I think they feel a little closer to it than a case down in Austin, Texas. We don't feel that connection to it. I do hear a lot of people talk about how he's wrongly accused. And it just surprises me.
As I brought it up on Kiss FM in Green Bay, Appleton many months ago, and got flooded with calls of like, how dare he say that this, and granted, it is the market where this happened. It is right. The Stephen Avery market. And so there's a lot of people connected to that case. I mean, I even have... It's a niece of actually a uncle of mine, not by blood, is Teresa Halbach. I was very surprised that there was the vitriol on it. And again, I don't even know what my opinion is on the case. I haven't looked at it in quite some time. I know there was Making a Murderer. Candace Owens, you can have your opinion about her every which way, and I think many do, had that other doc that came out that was more
convicting
critical.
Murderer.
Yeah, convicting a murderer, which I watched and I thought was interesting, and it pointed out a lot of the shittiness of the original doc in terms of things that were edited to be a certain way. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of questions there in my mind. Anyway, we're not talking about that case, but it is, but the point is your atmosphere is your temperatures in the room, and the pressure to convict and get your guy is such heavier, in the places where it took place, obviously, yeah, than others. And you're going to have very different viewpoints sometimes depending on those geographics.
100%. Look, the reality is pressure makes diamonds. And when you're in a community wherein something like this and I'm talking about the Yogeshaw murders, happens, you have a stunned, scared community, and there's going to be expectations. And it starts with the victims' families. And, you know, cops are like just internally feeling that pressure, you know, for the families, because they realize, you know, that the families want answers, need answers, deserve answers. And to have that kind of pressure on you as a cop, you know, it's like where you see it in shows, you know, the obsessed cop who can't sleep, who's working the case constantly, who's, you know, there's got to be the answer here. And, you know, sometimes there just isn't the answer. And sometimes you just have to really, you know, let the thing go cold and wait to see if something else develops, because what you have at the time just simply isn't going to be enough. And I think that like what you were talking about, Tony, that sometimes that the external factors may push people to do things that they wouldn't otherwise do if all things were equal. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, just it's again, that political pressure.
Yeah.
Well, there's motives for reasons for people to do things that they wouldn't otherwise do. And I think that it happens sometimes, you know, because it's like I'm always sitting there thinking in cases where it's just clear that they railroaded somebody, you know, and where it's so clear that they railroaded somebody that the question then becomes, did you knowingly convict an innocent person just to get a conviction on this fucking thing? Because that's a hard question. You know, I mean, if ever I were to hear an answer from a prosecutor that yes, they did, that person needs to be ripped away from the job of prosecutor as quickly as humanly possible, because that is like the last type of human being you need in that type of position. Because to think that somebody would do it intentionally is horrifying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you said, I think most of them come in with the best intentions. I don't think that typically they are trying to frame up innocent people. You know,
we have the attitude, obviously, we want to win. And that's kind of a toxic thing, I think, in our culture. We got to win. At what cost are we winning? Especially when it comes to things like this. Yes, you may get the conviction. You may get the person behind bars. And then the family may be able to sleep better at night because they think the bad person is gone.
But they're still out there.
Justice has been served. But not if you got the wrong person. Not if the wrong person is behind bars. You just ruined more lives. Yeah. And that victim that's dead, I can probably guarantee if they were a decent human being, they probably are not sitting wherever they're sitting now going, oh, this is great. At least everybody's sleeping well at night, but you didn't get the right guy. Like, that's not how that works.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.